Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. My name is John Manuel. I'm joined by J.J. Cooper. We're talking NL West top 10 prospects. We're talking a little Alex Rodriguez today. Thank you so much for the download. Let's just dive right in, J.J., and talk a little prospects here on the podcast. And we'll remind everyone we'll have a couple of email questions at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We'll read those in the show. Also want to remind everybody we're wrapping up our top 10s online. We're already done. But if you want to get the best prospect coverage, you can subscribe to Baseball America. And also, we would encourage you to order the Baseball America Prospect Handbook, 800-845-2726, JJ. And
or baseballamerica.com.
Baseballamerica.com, great place to order it. And if you order directly from us, JJ, what do you get?
You get, you know, we've always done 900 scouting reports. Well, if you order from us, you get 930 because we give you a 31st prospect. You know, we do 30 in the book. We give you a supplement that's an extra prospect for every team, so you get 31 prospects for every team. So
we made everyone's top 30 one Lauda.
Right. As if you're a Spinal Tap fan, we went to 11 this year.
Exactly. We went to
or 31.
We went to 31 on every organization. So 930 scouting reports is almost too much goodness. But I think that in the National League West, JJ, there's some organizations where just getting to 30 was rough. You didn't want to get to 30, and then you had to go to 31. It was like, oh, what are we going to do for this organization for 31, for this club? But for the Giants, I think, I don't think we had a hard time coming up with number 31 for the Giants. And although I don't think depth is their biggest strength, but I do think we both like the Giants' farm system as the best in this division. It's really crazy to say that they're not an organization known in the last 20 years anyway for being homegrown.
They're an organization, if you remember a couple of years ago, where they were intentionally would sign players before arbitration
Michael Tucker
began so that they could give up their first-round pick.
Absolutely, and of all drafts for them to do that, it was the 2005 draft,
not
which is the best draft in the last 5 years, and they did not have a pick until the fourth round. So, and then Ben Copeland was their top draft from that year, and they just lost him in the Rule 5 draft this offseason.
But nowadays, the Giants have kind of turned things around. They not only, I mean, they always have pitching prospects.
Right.
You can pretty much count on, if they basically gave up their rounds 1 through 50.
They'd
figure out a way to have pitching prospects.
They'd find some nice non-drafted free agents. And so especially they'd find position players like John Koutlangas and put them on the mound and they get to the big leagues. Or Jonathan Sanchez in the 27th round out of an NAIA school.
They would figure out pitching prospects. But what's different about their list right now is they actually have hitters now.
And yeah.
They've, you know, Buster Posey is the second best catching prospect, I think, you know, in the minors right now. Probably.
If he's not second, he's third. I mean, you could argue Santana if you wanted to, but yeah, he's right up there with Matt Wieters, no doubt.
I mean, he's, you know, well, Wieters would probably be, you know, at the part, you know, he'd be, you know, that he's at the top
he's the
of
Acropolis.
Mount Everest.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He's in the Acropolis of the city. Everybody else is on the slope down.
But and then Angel Villalona, who is, you know, one of the better young power prospects in the game.
Absolutely. A guy who's 17 years old, goes to the South Atlantic League and slugs .435 and finishes with the flourish that he did. Very encouraging. And the Giants, you know, it's amazing. I think people of a different generation, JJ, and I was just reading some Bill James about this in his 1960s and his historical abstract. You know, in the 60s, the Giants were just coming up with position player after position player. And I think they came up with Cepeda, McCovey.
They had too many at one point.
Yeah, they had too many first basemen. That was exactly it.
Cepeda, McCovey, you know.
And there's a third one I'm leaving out. It might have been Bill White. I'm not sure. My 60s baseball knowledge is leaving me, but they had too many. They had too many hitters. They came up with all the Alous, I think, at one time. I mean, they just had too many outfielders, too many hitters. And, of course, in the middle, they had Willie Mays. You know, they signed Monty Irvin out of the Negro Leagues in the 50s. I mean, they had hitters out the yin-yang. But the thing is, you think about it, they have not won a World Series since 1954. I mean, this is one of the longest droughts in baseball. Only guys I can think of that are longer is the Indians and, of course, the Cubs among established teams. But that's a pretty long drought. I mean, obviously, the Angels had never won one until 2002. Maybe the Giants.
But they won one in 2002.
They talked about all their bad luck. I mean, the Giants, that showed up. The Angels had this pitiful history beating the Giants. I mean, the Giants have not won since they moved to the state of California. Think about that. The San Francisco Giants have never won a World Series. I'm not sure if this group is what will lead them to the promised land. I do think that when you have some of these young hitters, and if they can cost control Lincecum and Kane and keep both those guys, there's potential to do something special with that kind of power arms and this kind of power bats.
And I had this thought. I was seeing this weekend, you know, on MLB Network, you know, they had the crawl going on as they're doing their wall-to-wall A-Rod coverage, which we'll get to later.
Sure.
But and it may, you know, the Giants have, you know, made an offer to Joe Creedy. And the thing that hit me was last year the Giants went through a lot of pain because they basically said, okay, we're going to rip the scab off the Barry Bonds era and move on. You know, the Band-Aid off, I should, you know, is what I meant to say.
But, yeah, I followed you.
You know, but, and so, I mean, they put guys in the big leagues who, most of them had no, they had a lot of guys in the, who had no business being in the big leagues.
Right.
But they
Brian
also,
Bukak.
But they also found some guys who were, you know, okay, hey, this guy, you know, survived that.
Right. Hey, John Bauker has some utility.
Pablo Sandoval's made it up very quickly, and man, he hit just as well the big leagues as he did in high A.
Yep.
You know, that kind of thing. Well, you combine that with a farm system that's, you know, developing better talent now, especially hitters, than it was for years. And you throw into it that really the economics of the game this year are setting up nicely for them in that, whereas last year they said, okay, well, we can't afford to go out and get, you know, a shortstop. We can't afford,
right,
you know, to get, you know, to get a guy up bat for the middle of the order. If they want to right now, they can kind of go out there and go, hey, you know,
prices are coming down.
We can get a Joe Creedy, hopefully cheap. You know,
absolutely.
We can, you know, we can get solid big leaguers that we don't have to lock in for 5 years or anything.
And look, we know that Edgar Renteria isn't the player he used to be. We know that Joe Creedy's not the player he used to be. But if you're the Giants, you'd feel a lot better going into the season with Renteria and Creedy than you did last year with Jose Castillo, Pirates cast off at third base, or Rich Aurelia, past his prime, at third base, and Brian Bukak and Emmanuel Burris at shortstop, where Manny Burris needs to play second base, and Brian Bukak was jumping from high A to the big leagues, and his bat was never his best tool anyway. So they're in a much better situation, and we all know that Brian Sabian likes his proven veterans as well. I think it's admirable for Brian Sabian to take a guy like a Dick Tidrow, who had so much success there in a long run, running their scouting and player development, had so much success developing pitchers, but promote him, vice president of player personnel, so he's doing a lot more big league stuff, and to bring in a guy who's universally respected in the industry in John Barr to run their scouting department, to bring in a minor league veteran like Fred Chicken Stanley to run their farm department. I think they've made good moves. They still have their identity as an organization, but they're rebuilding at the minor league level. You know, the one thing that you really look at and say, boy, if they hadn't signed Barry Zito 2 years ago, what would they have done with that money? They probably bring CeCe Sabathia home for about the same money.
Or you know, there have been talks about
Manny Ramirez. Absolutely. So they've developed some guys. A Fred Lewis who's come to the big leagues and showed that he could do it last year. I think they've lost 90 games last year, but I think they're on the upswing in San Francisco.
Right. There's a reason if you're a Giants fan to go, okay, we're headed back in the right direction.
Right. Now you've got the Rockies. To me, the Rockies and the Diamondbacks are the two most fascinating organizations in that, which is the real team? The ones that used young players to catapult themselves to the playoffs in 2007 with Arizona winning the division, Colorado going on that amazing finishing kick, winning the wild card, the pennant, and then losing in the World Series to the Red Sox. Or the 2008 versions of those two teams where they both fell back. And I think you have to have some significant questions about those young players, a Franklin Morales or a Chris Young or a Mark Reynolds or some of the guys who really jumped up in 07. Which of those teams do you think is better positioned, both either short-term or let's, I guess, focus on the top 10 long-term, JJ? Which of those two teams you think is in better shape minor league system-wise?
Minor league system-wise, I'd say the Rockies.
I think so, too.
You know, I'd still, if you said big league-wise, you know, throw it all together.
Right.
I kind of think that the Diamondbacks still are more likely, you know, kind of positioned to kind of contend over the next couple of years.
Yeah,
I think the Rockies, you know, the Matt Holliday trade is in some ways kind of an acknowledgement of, okay, we don't think that we are right there at the edge.
And Jeff Francis, I mean, he was their ace in 2007. He's having shoulder surgery, it looks like now. And the Diamondbacks have got Heron and they've got Webb. And to me, Webb is such a stud, and Heron's the perfect number two starter. That's a big edge, and plus they have Justin Upton. So I agree with you. At the big league level, I think Arizona is a little bit better positioned. On the farm, I think we're both agreeing Colorado's in better shape.
And really, part of that comes down to, you know, top three for the Rockies: Dexter Fowler, Jahulis Chacin, and Christian Frederick.
Yep.
That's a three that I would, you know, you compare that to the Diamondbacks, you know, since we're, you know, Jared Parker, Gerardo Parra, and Daniel Schlereth.
And then you go to four, Mark Hallberg. Hey, I like Mark Hallberg. You know, Illinois, Chicago, and Florida State represent. But, wow, Mark Hallberg, four? I think best case scenario, He's probably a solid second baseman on a championship team. More likely, he's a utility guy on a championship team, and that's your number four guy. And whereas, you know, you're talking about Rosario and a toolsy catcher. Hector Gomez has all kinds of tools. And my sleeper, I guess, in the Rocky system is really the number seven prospect, Esmil Rogers. I've heard some great reports on him out of the California League. I'm pretty sure he's a conversion guy, but a guy who's athletic. Yeah. He's got some real arm strength. He's starting to learn some pitchability. He's a guy I think who could really come quick next year.
They get, if you're comparing these two, again, kind of one of the ways to put it is okay, Casey Weathers, 6, Esmil Rogers, 7. Those are two guys who, I mean, now Weathers had some injury issues.
Right,
but
yeah, Tommy John at the end of the year.
But those two guys, long-term, compare them to number 3, Daniel Schlereth.
Yeah.
You know,
Casey Weathers, Daniel Schlereth are both similar.
You know, I mean, you know.
Schlereth, he was signed as a fourth-year junior. He's had arm problems himself. I mean, he is very similar to Casey Weathers in terms of the profile, no doubt.
So that's where I think that the Rockies stand out. You know, I know you're a big Dexter Fowler fan.
I do like
Dexter. I'm
a big
Chasin fan. I mean, he was a guy, if you want to talk about guys who probably did more to emerge on the scene last year. I
he's
mean,
one of the
to
top
think,
guys, yeah. No doubt. No, there's no doubt about it. And, Tracy Rigglesby, who wrote up our Rockies top 30, I edited it, and when he first sent it in, I remember thinking the guy, even his guys that were in this 15 to 20 range, there was upside in that system. And I thought that the last couple of drafts, both these teams draft college heavy. There's no doubt about that. Bill Schmidt and the Rockies draft a lot more college heavy than you'd think. But I think that the better Latin American program in Colorado is what gives them a leg up on what they're doing in Arizona. And then you have the Dodgers, JJ, who have been the best farm system in this division for several years. They're a little down right now, but I guess there's a good reason for their system being down.
Well, last year they promoted a lot of guys again. I mean, they've promoted a number of guys in the last couple of years.
Absolutely.
And then onto that, then they also made, you know, trades last year that really, I mean, if you...
They do have Ned Colletti in charge.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you didn't make some of those trades, I mean, if you didn't decided that maybe we don't need Casey Blake,
right.
You know, maybe we could, you know, maybe we can win this division without Casey Blake.
Right.
Okay, we'll give you back Carlos Santana. Well,
there's your number one prospect.
That's your number one prospect.
Absolutely.
So it's funny, like you talk about that Pirates trade.
Pirates.
You know, they traded, you know, away a number of guys, but
sure.
You really look at that and you go, okay,
got,
Brian
Morris.
They
got Manny Ramirez back.
They got, you know.
That was that three-team deal with Boston
three team,
and Pittsburgh.
I mean, you trade away LaRoche and Morris. That almost looks a little less painful right now than trading away Santana for Casey Blake.
It does. And not only so you gave up, they really gave up more for a couple months of Casey Blake. And now they've gone out in the offseason and re-signed for a call, re-signed Blake, kind of keeping the band together in a way. But it really won't matter if they don't bring back Manny Ramirez. I do think it's amazing that the Dodgers, their core is the homegrown core, with the exception of a great trade they made with Oakland for Andre Ethier. But Loney, Russell Martin, until they beat Russell Martin to the ground, catching him 145 games
I'm not
a year.
Dead yet.
Exactly. Exactly. And Chad Billingsley, if he can come back from his offseason bone break. And they don't keep Takashi Saito, so now Jonathan Broxton should ascend to that closer role. Looks like they're going to go homegrown again there with Corey Wade, maybe Ramon Troncoso in that middle relief, but also James McDonald, who I think we'd seen as a pitchability guy with good secondary stuff. Then he comes out of the bullpen in the postseason. He's blowing mid-90s, and now the Dodgers look like they're grooming him to be their top setup man.
And again, this is one of those arguments of why people always, you know, we get a lot of questions in chats when we do them. It's like, well, why don't you have this brand X reliever rated higher?
Right, right.
And James McDonald is the example of why not, because if you've got, I mean, James McDonald as a starter is a middle-of-the-rotation guy, as you put it, pitchability guy who knows how to pitch.
Absolutely. He's athletic. There could be more upside to that fastball.
Right. But out of the, you know, the starter, you know, you're talking the fastball, it's average. It's,
yeah.
You know.
It's just not his best pitch as a fastball.
Right.
I mean, as a starter.
You put him in the pen.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden.
Different animal.
The fastball goes up a tick. And all of a sudden you're like, hey, you compare that guy to, you know, relievers who are pitching the minors.
Right.
I'm
not comparing him to Phil Koch necessarily, but with the Yankees top 30, I had a similar guy in Phil Koch who's older, but was a solid starter. Guys liked him in the Eastern League this year. Yeah, he was older, but, you know, sometimes left-handers take a little bit longer to figure it out. He was a junior college guy who started to figure things out. You put him in the bullpen, he's blowing 96, 97 from the left side. Now you got a difference maker, and that's what James McDonald is. And that's the thing. James McDonald's 2, and he could have been 1. If you believe in Ivan De Jesus as a shortstop, he could have been 1, but I don't think the Dodgers do believe in Ivan De Jesus at shortstop, or else they wouldn't have re-signed Rafael Furcal for as much as they gave him.
The thing that jumps about this Dodgers list, the thing that will make this or break it over the long term is okay, Ethan Martin, number 3.
Right.
Who, really, I mean, if you're talking about, we were just talking about, you know, pitchers who emerged, Chacin emerged in the minors. Martin's the guy who emerged
in
the
draft class, no doubt.
I mean,
he
going
did on
into the
one
year.
Night on with our Matt Blood was there in March when he pitched great against American Heritage. He was a third baseman coming into that game, a third baseman slash pitcher. He came out of that game as a pitcher slash third baseman.
And so you've got him, and then also number five, Scott Elbert, who pre-injury would have been number one on this list.
He was number one in the Sally League 1 year, and everything you hear about him is the delivery is violent, but the stuff is starter caliber stuff. If he comes back healthy, he's going to be, I think, as effective as a reliever as James McDonald, if not more, because he's a power guy from the left side.
Those two guys, if they turn out to be what the Dodgers think they will be, you know, or what they hope they will be,
yeah,
then that list could end up being, you know, number two out of this group.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
it's too far away to say that right now. I mean, it's like
their top six is very interesting for me because I like Josh Lindblom quite a bit. He's got a big-time arm. I like Ethan Martin. I like McDonald and Elbert, but you know, and Andrew Lambeau, who probably would be our five-hole hitter on our Greek World Baseball Classic team after Moustakas and Markakis. Well, Markakis and Moustakas. But, you know, Lambeau's it's short for – I forget what it's short for, but he counts. He World Baseball Classic rules are pretty flimsy. If the Hairston brothers can play for Mexico, I think Andrew Lambeau can play for Greece. But, of course, there is no Greek World Baseball Classic team. That's the only way I
Much
think I could
really
– Much
to the chagrin of John Manuel.
I wish they'd let me try to organize one. I would have pitched some of these players on it. Lambeau could have pitched for us, too. He was a fine thumbing lefty in high school. If the Dodgers
had
let
the Dodgers, us. Yeah, the Dodgers. Oh, go ahead.
Hey, the three best pitchers would have been Moustakas, Markakis, and Lambeau. That's the problem with the Greek team. After George Kontos, we got to give George Short his props, too.
And I don't think there's any debate if we're saying, okay, so who's bringing up the rear in the NL West this year?
San Diego, drink it in. I think San Diego is clearly the Padres. And this is appropriate to talk about this week, JJ, also, in the week in which they designate Matt Bush for assignment, the number one overall prospect pick in the 2004 draft. And this is a guy, excuse me, that 04 draft was pretty good. Not great, but pretty good. But they got about the, really, if you look at the whole first round, he's in the bottom three of worst picks in the entire first round, not to mention being the worst number one pick overall ever.
Who would be
it was Matt Campbell and Kyle Waldrop are the only other two guys who haven't had any, who really haven't given their club any value. And I looked at it, to me, if a guy at least even got the double A, he became something of a tradable commodity for his club. And those three guys never even got the jump to double A. They've all had injury issues. Waldrop still might. He's coming off Tommy John surgery. Matt Campbell's done. He was released by the Royals. But those guys were picked, if I remember correctly, 25th and 29th overall and did not get $3.15 million. Maybe if you put their bonuses together, they got $3.15 million. But talk about misallocation of resources. That's the Matt Bush pick, and that's – the Padres, frankly, have not drafted well at the top of the draft for years.
I mean, to give
it's a brutal list.
To give you the idea, Khalil Green, 2002. Okay, so that one.
That's the best career.
That's the best. Okay, 1999, Vince Faison, 2000, Mark Phillips, 2001, Jake Gautreaux, who's back in the affiliated minors after a year in Indy Ball.
That's right.
Khalil Green, 2002, Tim Stauffer, 2003.
Ow,
Matt
my shoulder.
Bush, 2004, Cesar Carrillo, 2005, Matt Antonelli, 2006, Nick Schmidt, 2007, and Alan Dykstra, 2008.
I believe you both had a word there in Matt describing Matt Bush. I'm Matt bleeping Bush.
Yes, that.
Matt expletive Bush and expletive whatever high school. What a pitiful story that was.
But one of the things that jumps out about this is, man, the number of guys who got hurt out of this group.
Oh, yeah. And it's all the pitchers have gotten hurt.
I mean, you got to throw Matt Bush in there. Matt Bush had a TJ.
Tommy John for Bush, Tommy John for Schmidt, Tommy John for Carrillo, and then 2003, Tim Stauffer threw his shoulder out of Sunken Diamond the weekend before he was drafted and signed for $750,000. So,
and you got to go then Alan Dykstra, who
comes in with a vascular necrosis, basically Bo Jackson disease, if you wanted to call it something. If you were going to name after somebody, you'd name it after Bo Jackson, a degenerative hip condition. And, you know, that wasn't disclosed prior to the draft. But if any team should have known it, it would be the Padres, seeing as how he injured it playing high school basketball in San Diego.
And I'll give them that they maybe, you know, no one else knew about it either.
They should have known about it.
But the other thing that
our beat writer for them, John Maffey, knew it. So
okay, that is a yeah, that's a
that tells y'all you need to know. John knew it. They didn't know it.
But the thing that really jumped out also that that seems like the Padres are still recovering from is they had a couple years there where they really emphasized pitchability.
Correct. That is Grady Fuson's MO. He likes guys who hit the mitt. He likes good changeups. If you remember the guy that he really staked his reputation on when he left Oakland and went to Texas, it was Mario Ramos, a guy with a below-average fastball but good command and a changeup. Well, when he got to the big leagues, he got knocked around a little bit. He got timid. All of a sudden, you don't really have good command when you're afraid to throw strikes. So that is their MO, and that's how you get Wade LeBlanc. That's how you get Josh Gier. And that's what they have. They don't really have power arms outside of Matt Latos. One thing I will say for the Padres, I criticize their draft and their draft track record. I actually like their 2008 draft, and that's including Dykstra, who I think was an overdraft where they got him, but he does have legitimate power. He can hit. He does control the strike zone. I'm not sure he's value, but I like Jeff Decker. I like him a lot. I like James Darnell where they got him. That's an athletic, either third baseman or maybe future right fielder, guy with real power. I like their draft in 2008. But they, at the top of the draft, they have spent a lot of money and not gotten a lot of return consistently this entire decade.
The other thing I'll say for this Padres list is that, you know, if you want to – okay, for 20 seconds here, Padres fans, put on your rose-colored glasses here.
Yeah, that's what I just did.
I'm going to go with there, too. I mean, Ben Antonelli, as bad as he was last year, you know, okay, maybe that was just a year that everything fell apart.
Yeah, it sounds like he got too big, bulked up too much, lost bat speed, lost quickness. So maybe he can get it back.
Maybe he can get it back. Okay, Cedric Hunter, Will Venable, they're not going to be impact guys. But, you know,
I've talked to guys who like Will Venable as a solid average regular.
Right. So there are – this is not a list. I mean, we were talking about the Astros recently. I look at these two lists.
Yeah.
This is not the Astros list.
Astros are worlds behind these guys.
This is not an Astros list. Like, Jeff Decker is number three on this list.
He's at least number two in the Astros list. I like him better than Bud Norris. I'm with you.
You know, Jeff Decker could be – I mean, the guy can hit. What's the most important tool that you can have as a position player?
He can hit. And, you know, he can throw. He was 93 miles an hour off the mound, according to his personal pitching coach, Steve Ontiveros. I believe is eraking.com, I believe is Steve's website. But also, Randy Smith, their international scouting director, and the Padres, very aggressive internationally the last couple of years. Guys like Adis Portillo and Luis Domo Romo. I have to throw that name in because I really like his name. There are others whose names I'm not recalling, but they have been very aggressive on the Latin American front. I think that will – I do think they've bottomed out, I think, at 29. They had a good OA draft and a good signing period internationally. They brought a lot of talent in 2008. We've got to see it perform a little bit, but I think they're on the way up. I think this will be as low as you see them go. So
before we go to the mailbag, let's get the A-Rod portion of the –
Okay, I was in a mailbag to transition to A-Rod.
But
let's do that because it's one last prospect question.
We're flying without a net as usual. So
that's right.
Pre-planning is, you know, for other people.
But it's a question for you from Clint Scholes, who is a Royals fan, loves the podcast on the top 30 from BA. Two quick prospects in the Royals organization that didn't make the list. First, Jeff Bianchi. Could he still develop? What could explain his ridiculous home road splits? And then John Flanagan. What are your thoughts on this lefty? I forgot to ask you in the pre-show about John Flanagan, but let's focus first on Jeff Bianchi.
Let's start with Bianchi. With Bianchi, what it really came down to was, you know, they had a group of middle infielders that have really just not developed that well. I mean,
the Kyle Mertens and the Jeff Bianchis.
You know, that are kind of, you know, if you look at it right now, you still, you
it's
know.
Kurt Mertens, I believe.
Kurt Mertens, yeah, not Kurt Mertens. You know, you were thinking Kyle Martin, who...
Yeah, that's right.
You know, but if you're looking at it, what it came down to is okay, so when you're going to rank guys, you know, Bianchi was in that group, you know, to be considered for the top 30. But when it came down to it, it's like, okay, do you go with a guy like Bianchi who really has, you know, he's a second baseman and his bat has not developed to what it needs to be for a second baseman.
That's
really
the biggest problem. He's already moved down the defensive spectrum from shortstop to second base. That's a big issue. Hasn't stayed healthy.
And you've got a choice of either, you know, ranking guys like that, or do you rank a guy like, you know, I mean, just to throw out a guy like Jose Bonilla, who's a catching prospect for them, who has not played full season ball yet. Okay, so, you know, he's a long ways away, but, you know, but at the same time, he's got, he's got more upside, you know, right. than Bianchi. I mean, and with Bianchi at this point, what's the upside? You know, well, it's, you know, I mean, it's that he could maybe be, you know, probably a utility infielder.
Right, and it's hard
as a utility infielder who doesn't play shortstop well enough to really want to play him. Now, if I had to re-rank it now, post Jason Taylor drug suspension,
right.
He probably would, you know, there's a very good chance he would be in the top 30 because, I mean, or the top 31, actually,
right,
would be accurate.
Right.
But because that's what happened is that, you know, basically, I mean, Jason Taylor went from being a prospect who kind of regained some prospect status.
To same as it ever was for Jason Taylor, unfortunately.
I mean.
And we should address, I mean, Wilmington's ballpark is historically one of, if not the toughest park to hit in the Carolina League. It's cold, it's windy, but mostly it's cold early and it's cold late. And Bianchi did have basically an 850 OPS on the road, about 589 at home. But the bigger issue for me, and I think we talked about him when you were working on that list, he doesn't control the strike zone and he doesn't play shortstop. And if you're comparing him to a guy like Kyle Martin, who is older and is behind him on the depth chart in that organization, that's a guy who can play shortstop, at least solidly, does have just as much power. I think he has as much offensive upside and has a little bit better defensive profile because the Royals don't seem to recognize that as our problem, really.
No, I mean, you know, and with Martin, I mean, it's going to be a very big year for Martin. Martin's going to have to prove this year that last year, you know, what he did in limited time, what he did in Hawaii wasn't a nice fluke by a guy who was, you know, basically a little old for the league. That being said, you know, you're talking, he has legit power.
Right, right.
And that's something you're looking for. You know?
Absolutely, no, absolutely.
I mean, the funny thing is the profile of those two guys isn't as different as you would think.
Right.
But the tie to me goes to Martin because Martin has done it like in Hawaii. You know, he's done it a little bit more productively.
Yep.
And his tools, even though Bianchi is definitely a much higher profile guy, his tools may be a little bit better, actually.
Yeah, and Martin's, I mean, the separator is the power. Martin slugged over 500 in the Midwest League and then tied for the lead in the Hawaii Winter Baseball in home runs.
And Flanagan is a guy a long ways away. You know, really didn't come up a whole lot in doing the calls yet. I mean, he's, you know, we'll see him hopefully this year, you know, hopefully this year in the Midwest League and kind of get a little better read on him. I mean, I don't want to just kind of dismiss him yet, but when I was doing, you know, when you're doing that sorting through, okay, you know, so what are the guys, you know, in the Appy League, what are the guys, you know, in their AZL team and all, he wasn't the first guy who was coming up.
Right.
And there are not a whole lot of guys who are going to make a top 30.
But a good sleeper. I mean, a good sleeper to talk about, a lefty with a projectable body. But, you know, top 30, even an organization like that, hard to rank a guy who doesn't have really loud stuff.
Right, especially because they got a couple guys, kind of, you know, a Carlos Fortuna, you know, guys like that who do have kind of loud stuff.
Right, and that's the thing that I think there's some interesting things going on with the Royals system, and there better be when you spend a record $11 million in the draft.
And they're
going
to have another high pick, you know, again. I mean, by the time we're doing this, you know, next year, they very well could have Moustakas Hosmer and, you know, someone else from, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Very high from this
year. And Aaron Crow, maybe. Yeah. Who knows? I mean, the Royals, we do have all of our early draft content up at baseballamerica.com. The Royals picked 12th. Actually, I doubt Aaron Crow falls to 12, but very interesting offseason for the Royals. I'm not sure there are a lot of people who are great fans of the moves they made. They've had a lot of spare parts, it seems, at considerable cost. Willie Bloomquist and
really,
Mike Jacobs and those
guys.
And
what we're talking about is like, for if they wanted to add those guys, would they have been better off waiting? Because the Willie Bloomquist of the world, if you hadn't signed them, are probably right now, you know, easily much easier to sign because
correct
those guys are looking for jobs.
Correct the mundo. But I think the bigger a guy who's not looking for a job, very well signed up, is Alex Rodriguez.
He's locked up for a while still.
He's locked up for a while, but he is as in the news as any baseball player really has been in a long time, JJ, for all the wrong reasons. Sports Illustrated report over the weekend that Alex Rodriguez failed a steroids test in 2003 when Major League Baseball players were survey tested, supposed to remain anonymous. 104 players tested positive. He's the only name that's come
actually,
forward.
Technically, I think he's one of two because I think Bond's name did also come out of that also.
Okay, I think you're right.
Bond's name came out last week, and it was just because everyone,
yeah.
There was no news to that. Oh,
correct.
Barry Bonds tested positive for steroids, kind of basically.
But Alex Rodriguez tests positive, and today, I guess it'll be on SportsCenter tonight, on Monday as we record this, Rodriguez admits to Peter Gammons, yes, he did it, admits that he took it during his entire 3-year tenure, basically, with the Texas Rangers, And JJ, it is pretty. I guess I shouldn't be shocked. I guess I'm really not shocked, but it's a bad day for baseball when the best player in the game. I think he's been the best player in the game since Bonds left. If it's not him, it's Albert Pujols. But a guy's been in the discussion for best player in baseball for more than a decade. Has this tied to his name? It's not a good day for the game, and obviously a pretty brutal game for a pretty brutal day for A-Rod and his carefully crafted image.
Go a step further. I mean, with really what you're talking about here, beyond everything else, is here's the guy, as much as even Bonds, maybe more so. Alex Rodriguez could have gone down, and I say could have because there's no way that this is ever going to be removed from his legacy. He could have gone down as maybe the greatest player of all time. I mean,
absolutely.
The guys that you would consider in that discussion.
The Ruths and the Mays and the Mantles and the Aarons.
Are all
and those
guys who
were
hitters who played, I know, don't take anything away from Ruth being also an outstanding pitcher. But all them are corner outfielders.
Right.
Here's a guy who's producing like that, who's a shortstop third baseman.
He really is the best hitting infielder of all time. I mean, if you really think about it that way. I mean, who was it before him? Mike Schmidt as a power guy anyway? Before this era? Yeah. I mean, and a guy who it's A-Rod, no doubt. I mean, a guy who put up these kind of numbers playing shortstop. I mean, Cal Ripken, he's clearly better than Cal Ripken. So, but now you have, and it's amazing, this admission, putting it on. Well, there's so many angles you could go at this from. First, A-Rod saying that that this is kind of responding to the pressure, basically, of his contract. It's another, in my mind, a weapon you could use or a criticism, I think a lot of people come out looking bad in this. A-Rod, first of all.
Yeah.
The union, second of all, comes out looking worse and worse and worse in every steroid part of it. And Bob Costas, or as I like to call him, Bob Costas, made this point on MLB Network that a lot of Scott Boras' clients have tested positive here. And this is not looking great for Boras in my mind either. But I think biggest hit might just go to the union, JJ.
I think the biggest hit is the union. I think Boras comes out of this not, he can, I don't think we'll get a comment out of Scott Boras out of this, but he can very much kind of say, well, look, this is, I'm not there every day as, players train and all that. But with the union, now, I think Orza came out today, right before I came in here, I think I saw a link that said that, he was denying that he tipped off, players. But, that story, his initial response on that, not good. Initial response of, I don't want to talk about this. Well, that's not really something that, that's not the PR world. If you got a PR person in your, in your ear, that's not what they're going to tell you to say. I don't want to talk about this. But it just comes off now, I hate to say it, but the big loser overall, again, is baseball.
Yeah, no doubt. That's
because
the biggest problem.
What happens with A-Rod getting this, we won't talk about A-Rod too much here on this, because y'all are getting, you're dialing this, you're getting A-Rod, talking everywhere. But basically, what it seems like to me is this is the one that now just says, okay, you just assume everyone was using.
Yeah, pretty much. The guys who come out looking better in this, I actually talked about this. I had the opportunity last night to interview a couple of ex-big league pitchers who are helping the Southern University baseball program, Lee Smith and Dave Stewart. And, whenever I talk to Stu, and I've done this a couple times because of his involvement with Coach Cador down at Southern, I always talk to him about Roger Clemens. But I asked both those guys last night, in the midst of all this, who comes out looking better to them? They both actually said, Jim Rice comes out looking better. Whether he had Hall of Fame numbers or not is, they both think of him as a Hall of Fame player. But he did 389 clean, 389 home runs clean. Dale Murphy comes out looking better. Andre Dawson comes out looking better. From the contemporaries of Alex Rodriguez, how about Ken Griffey Jr.? How much better is Ken Griffey Jr.'s career? He hit 600 legit home runs.
But
I don't think he's under suspicion.
I hate to say he's not under suspicion, but A-Rod wasn't really under suspicion. I know Canseco had fingered him, but he was really not under suspicion
the
other day.
I mean, Jr.'s body, he had opportunity after opportunity to use. He talked to Barry Bonds. He's on ground level with Barry Bonds. That's supposedly the conversation where Barry Bonds told Jr., screw this. I'm doing it. I'm using him like those guys. And Griffey did not. Griffey, his body broke down repeatedly with all the injuries that he had. I think if he had used, I think he could use the Andy Pettit defense and say, well, I used to recover from injuries, and people would have almost forgiven him. I do think Jr. comes out looking a lot better in retrospect. I think a guy who's not necessarily a self-promoter, does not carefully craft his image like A-Rod, has endured a lot of criticism in his second part of his career in Cincinnati.
I don't disagree with you, but the one thing I just have to say is at this point, I'm just not able to say, I'm not comfortable saying, I mean.
How about Greg Maddux? That's another guy that came up that Dave Stewart brought up to me as a guy who, Greg Maddux dominated in an offensive era. And if you ever saw Greg Maddux without his clothes on, you know he didn't use.
Right. The guys I was jokingly saying is Maddux, Jamie Moyer, because if you use steroids, you'd hope you get your fastball
That's
over
right.
80.
That's right.
And David Wells. So there's only three guys I can think of that I would say confidently.
I think David Wells probably used some banned substances, just not steroids.
But the thing about David Wells is that if you aren't taking good enough care to not get gout, you're not taking performance-enhancing drugs because you're really not worried about your performance.
Do steroids get rid of gout, or do they produce gout?
I don't know about that.
Or HGH? He might have had that. Might have been the human growth he had. It wasn't really gout. It was some other part of his body growing.
But it is. It's just. It is a sad. I mean, it's a sad day. I am glad to see that A-Rod came out right away, and did not choose the Roger Clemens route of basically.
He's had a bad offseason, though.
A 2-year story or whatever. The thing that he did today, by admitting it at least, it's always going to be there. It's always going to be tied to him. But at least when he goes to spring training, the questions will be, how is he handling this now instead of being every day, so did you use?
No, I agree. I think there's some other guys who come out, and just from the Baseball America's perspective, how about the University of Miami baseball program? I believe this past weekend they just dedicated Alex Rodriguez Stadium at Mark Light Field. Their improvements to Mark Light Field, a lot of them paid for by A-Rod. Now, that's not looking so hot for the University of Miami. I mean, I'm just saying there's a lot of – there are repercussions for this everywhere. You have his high school coach, Rich Hoffman, on ESPN defending A-Rod. You know, I was talking about this at lunch today with some of the coaches at North Carolina State. We had lunch, and it's like, you never saw that for Roger Clemens. You never saw – And the thing is that they didn't want to. I'm not saying that they wouldn't have. I think if they'd asked Wayne Graham, who coached Roger either 1 year or 2 years at San Jacinto Junior College, or if they'd asked Wayne to talk about Andy Pettit, I think Wayne would have spoken up for both those guys the same way Rich Hoffman did. I do think it tells you A-Rod's PR acumen that he helped. I think he probably had some people get Rich Hoffman out front for him. I think there's going to be an A-Rod counteroffensive, but how effective can it really be? It might help A-Rod's image a little bit. Baseball's image is going to take the bigger hit, I think.
The winner that I'll say out of this weekend, besides give SI, SI Sports Illustrated, Selena Roberts, and I forgot the name of the report. I feel bad to say that.
But MLB Network.
But MLB Network, this was the first big test for MLB Network, which I think, as a baseball fan, speaking on the podcast to other baseball fans, the idea of a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week network about baseball is we're all thumbs up for that.
We're just sorry we didn't have the money to implement that idea first.
but that being said, this was a big test for them because there's two ways they could have gone. They could have gone the approach of, hey, they could have even just basically not even blown it off, but run the crawl around the bottom that says A-Rod admit steroids. And we're now continue with our regularly, scheduled
program. Here's another 20 strikeout game from days of yore and yesteryear.
Right. They could have done that. Instead, they went wall-to-wall coverage and really, I thought, had outstanding coverage on Saturday.
It certainly helped to have a guy like Bob Costas around to be the face kind of that coverage. They've obviously employed guys like Tom Verducci. It's not just former players. They have really good reporters who are helping
them. They had many different perspectives, but to see them cover it extensively, the thing it showed was, and we'll have to keep seeing that this continues, but they weren't the house organ on Saturday. They weren't looking at this from the prism of, well, this is bad for baseball, so let's underplay it. They looked at it from the prism journalistically of, this is the big story. This is more important than us showing another Randy Johnson 20 strikeout game.
Which is encouraging in this day and age that someone did that, actually.
Right. They covered it, and that's smart because in the long run, we're not, it's the average viewer is not watching and going, hey, is this doing good for baseball? What they're looking at is this better than ESPN, which is my other choice to watch on this?
Yeah, pretty much. And I think the consensus is that it was. So it was a difficult weekend for baseball. There's no doubt about it. Alex Rodriguez is too high profile of a guy for this to not be the dominant story. And it's probably going to be the dominant story. I'm sure this will be a bigger deal than the World Baseball Classic in a couple of weeks. And For me, I was very glad going over to NC State today and being in their coaches' offices and seeing their field on a 65-degree day like we're having in North Carolina. I know I was wishing there was college baseball to go out there and see.
The great news is that
there will be actual games
bad.
Soon.
This story's bad, but you know what? Pitchers and catchers are going to report real soon.
Yep.
And
there'll be college baseball. There'll be World Baseball Classic.
And we've got enough high-profile guys out there. There's interesting stories on, you know, more related to on the field that are going to be going on. Like, Manny Ramirez hadn't signed.
That's right.
That's fascinating.
Adam Dunn has not signed.
Bobby Abreu has not signed. I mean, there are players
Orlando
out
Hudson
there.
Orlando Hudson hasn't signed.
There are players out there who, if your team signs them, you would say, hey, this helps us win this year.
Yep.
Not
yep.
Usually at this point, it's like, hey, we signed a guy who could, you know, if things break right, be a fifth starter.
It's been a pretty unusual offseason in baseball. There's absolutely no doubt. From A-Rod and Madonna to A-Rod and the steroids to everything in between to the free agents, the Manny saga. It's been an unusual offseason. We obviously fill a lot of it with prospect talk. We're looking forward to getting down to talking about actual games that matter on the college side, games that matter in the World Baseball Classic, and then, of course, the minor league season and the major league season coming up. But I do think that there's no doubt that A-Rod's story being the end of the offseason, the pitchers and catchers can't report soon enough. So
I'd agree.
So send those emails in, podcast@baseballamerica.com. We thank you for the questions that we already got and we read today. And for J.J. Cooper, I'm John Manuel. Thanks for the longish podcast. We'll see you next week here at baseballamerica.com. Until then, so long, everybody.